Hey everyone, this is Roxy Tart, and if you love all things pinup, Disney, and sparkly, then you should be listening to my podcast, Roxy's World. You can find it on my website, roxy-tart.com, or search Roxy's World on the iTunes Store or Stitcher app. Roxy's World is brought to you by Monster Movie Media.
Monster Movie Media presents...
This is Jim Hill of Jim Hill Media, and you're listening to Creepy Kingdom. And why aren't you listening to my podcast?
Greetings and welcome to episode 27 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host. Why did I say that like that? I don't know. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II, and I'm fired up. I'm excited. You want to know why? Because we are finally going to continue the amazing conversation I had with Jim Hill in our last episode, episode 26. We got it started. Talked about many great things, including the amazing attraction for Villains Mountain that was almost built. Everyone has been losing their minds, just like me. I'm glad I wasn't alone on that. You guys are reaching out to me on Twitter, sharing your thoughts on that, and we're all just like, wow. In case you did not hear the last episode, definitely when this one is done, hop to it. You don't have to listen to the other one first, because this is totally different stuff we're talking about here. And in case you didn't listen to last week's episode, and you also don't know who Jim Hill is, Jim Hill has been covering the Walt Disney Company for the past 30 years and has amazing insight and connections. He's heard amazing stories, which he's shared on his website, jimhillmedia.com, and also on his podcast, The Disney Dish with Jim Hill. The Disney Dish with Jim Hill. Your odds are you're going to hear about some things that you've never heard about before. That's what Jim brings to the table. We have some amazing, amazing stuff coming up in this episode. But before we jump to that, I just want to ask if any of you will be attending the Villains Unleashed event that will be taking place at Hollywood Studios on August 23rd. That's, of course, Disney's Hollywood Studios, located on the Walt Disney World Resort in Orlando, Florida. I unfortunately cannot make it. So if any of you are, please get in touch with me. I would love to talk to you about it afterwards. And in case some of you are listening and don't know about it, this is a special after-hours party that's a separate ticket, needs to be bought, not regular theme park admission. All rare, all these rare, crazy villains, characters will be there to meet. There's a whole bunch of other stuff about it. It's a villains event. Well, now, without any further ado, let's begin.
You know, going forward, you did have Disney exploring dark, you know, versus light. In fact, if you've ever seen any of the concept art for Beastly Kingdom for Disney's Animal Kingdom, mm-hmm. the Dragon's Tower ride, I mean, you know, that's half of that, you know, half of that land is set in the the light, you know, the fun fairy tale realm. So that's where you have, for example, your interactive, you know, maze attraction, the Quest for the Unicorn, but, and, you know, the Three Little Pigs House and stuff like that. And then, but once you cross over the bridge into the dark side, you have, you know, kind of the desiccated, you know, burned out castle, and this is where the scary dragon lives. So they were looking at it. They were legitimately looking at doing this. But again, in the end, the combination of do we really want to scare people, in a case of Beastly Kingdom, Disney waited so long to build it that the, you know, just to be blunt here, the Imagineer that designed it left the company, went over to Universal, and that's where Dragon,
right,
you know,
yeah, ruling Adventure Dragon ideas were recycled, right?
Yeah, which to be fair, Disney stole a number of ideas from Universal for Disney Hollywood Studios, or excuse me, Disney MGM. I mean, you know, there's
stole the whole concept.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, it depending on who you talk to, that's, you know, Sid Sheinberg, the guy who was in charge of the Universal Parks, made no bones about the fact that they had a meeting with Michael Eisner. In fact, you know, he Sid could, if you asked him, he'd tell you, look, we held it in the Jack Webb building. I can tell you where Michael Eisner sat at the table.
Wow.
And that was when Eisner worked for Paramount, and Universal was looking for a financial partner to share the cost of building a park in Orlando. And so they met with everybody, and Eisner, Sid was, you know, Eisner asked very good questions. He knew that project inside out. And then to watch how, you know, they had an earthquake-based attraction, and that showed up for Disney. And, you know, their Hollywood Boulevard was a lot like what Disney did. And, you know, it's kind of an unfortunate story, but Michael Eisner was very competitive. And, you know, if he could get an advantage over the competition, he took it. So anyway, so now to jump ahead. You know, we've all heard the stories about, you know, Disney wanting basically to get into the villains business. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, for example, wanting to create a scarier version of Mickey's Not So Scary. You right. know, the notion of doing something strictly at the studios. In fact, for a time, it was being proposed as a Tim Burton themed event, and the whole notion was you could do, the characters from Nightmare Before Christmas. You could do Frank and Weenie. You could do Alice and, you know, Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. There was enough of a body of work that he'd done that you could kind of do a temporary overlay. But the belief was it was too narrow. It was, in the end, it was too thin. And to be blunt, Frank and Weenie didn't make enough money to sort of justify, you know, trying to build a theme park overlay, an entire theme park overlay around two properties, the Nightmare and Alice. But then we all saw what happened when they did the villains event a year or so back.
Crazy.
Which is why, you know, Disney's circling back on the idea now. And the interesting thing is that's going to be an after-hours hard ticket. And the notion is that, you know, bump out the border, throw a little more money at it, see what happens. And if it's successful, you know, this could finally be Disney's answer to Not So Scary, that you know, sort of, you know, create this couple of night event that celebrates the Disney villains around Halloween and see what happens.
Right.
You know, at the same time, it's just sort of, let's be honest here, one of the reasons that people do go to Mickey's Not So Scary is you can see these villains, you know, you can see these characters out in the park. So it's from an entertainment and operations point of view, it's like, all right, how do we differentiate? You know, what are we going to do different for Mickey's Not So Scary? If we pulled all the villains out and send them over to Disney Hollywood Studios, how do we justify that? How do we sell that? So it's kind of interesting. You may have noticed over the last couple of years that Disney's done these things for these special hard ticket events where, for example, you can go you know, and they'll be a part of the park where you can get your picture taken with all seven of the dwarves and Snow White. And that seems to be what Disney's proposing now, that for Mickey's Not So Scary, you know, you'll have these opportunities where at the kingdom there'll be Aladdin, Princess Jasmine, and the genie. Or, you know, Prince Philip and, you know, Briar Rose. And that's how they'll do it. They'll do these groupings where you can only, only at the kingdom can you get Woody, Jesse, you know, Buzz Lightyear and Bullseye all in the same place at the same time. And it, I, you know, it's sellable, I think, I, you know, and it then allows you to create this, this opportunity to just send the villains over to the studio. But you know, the weird thing that's holding it up is the Osborne lights. Because the Osborne lights is such a big money generator for the resort. You know, just that they each year they throw it on a little earlier. In fact, what's kind of interesting is that Jennings Osborne, the gentleman who you know, created this whole thing in Arkansas 15 years or so back for his daughter, passed away a couple of years ago, and he was a millionaire who spent most of his fortune. So when he died, just before he died, a big deal fell through. So he was in really tough financial straits, and the family basically had to sell off everything that, that he'd collected. And Disney actually made a run at the family to the effect of, look, you know, we pay you a licensing fee every year. Would it be okay, you know, could you sell us the name outright?
Right.
You know, and I think the family balked because I've been hearing this very interesting thing. I don't know if you remember, ABC ran a show this holiday, past holiday season, The Great Christmas Light Fight.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was like a competition reality show or something. Yeah.
That's it, exactly. And supposedly, it's coming back this season. And the plan is that they will offer as a prize to whoever wins this year's Christmas Light Fight the opportunity to decorate one section of, you know, the streets of the world, that section of the back lot. And what's, and again, I just want to put this out there so people are aware that it's happening, because Disney has decided to create a companion show, which is the Great Halloween Fright Fight. And
ABC is
ABC. Well, Disney. Yeah, again, I'm sorry. I talk Disney. It's like,
let's be clear to the
ABC, ESPN. Again, it all goes back to the mouse.
I know.
But yeah, if you Google ABC Halloween decoration competition, they're supposedly shooting that now. Hmm. And the notion is that eventually, sometime over the next 4 or 5 years, the Osborne lights will go away, and this will basically be the Halloween Fright Christmas Light Fight area of the park, and it will be all about these families being allowed to create scary light displays or festive light displays. And the challenge is that in order to decorate this whole area back there, they start in August. All right, I mean, they're back there with cherry pickers, and they're working, you know, as soon as the park closes for the night. And sometimes they're in there during the day. You can actually come in and see them working, trying to get everything, all the stuff that Jennings had brought into the park and Disney has gradually replaced over the years. So I'm thinking that if they go that route, you know, the combination of the fright, you know, the fright light display and the Disney villain thing, you could see this potentially grow out to be a big time seasonal thing. I mean, think about it. You know, the Mickey's Not So Scary, you know, they what is it, the first week of September now? You know, yeah. So, you know, it's entirely possible if this proves to be successful and, you know, based on the reaction, the crowds, you know, the people who couldn't get into the park because it was so congested when they did this last year, You know, you could see the villains in a big, big way become part of the signature of Disney Hollywood Studios. You know, and you know, there's still a part of me that's kind of sad that we didn't get the villain village at Fantasyland, because I love that idea of that opening ceremony every morning. You know, just the notion of the captain of the guard coming and unlocking the door, and the villains so happy they can finally escape and get into the kingdom and cause mischief again. But yeah, I mean, they did it. They would walk up right to the edge and sort of kick the tires of an idea, and just either couldn't find the sponsorship or just didn't have the intestinal fortitude to go forward. But as you said at the top of the show, that, let's be honest here, things have changed. You know, we just had Maleficent.
Right.
You know, and there were a lot of people at Disney who didn't believe this was going to work. In fact, it remind me, at the end of the show, I've got a copy of the original script for Maleficent that, you know, given what your topic of the show is, you really should read.
Oh, wow.
Because the first third of that movie was very, very different. I mean, I can spoil it for you if you want.
We're all, I think, at this point. If you haven't seen it yet, you know.
Okay. Because, again, it's a fascinating bend on it's kind of a funhouse mirror of what the movie actually became. Because, again, they shot these scenes. I mean, Miranda Richardson actually played the Queen of the Fairies. And I'm blanking the name of the gentleman. He's about to become the new Doctor Who, but he played the King of the Fairies. But basically, all right, instead of the way the movie starts now, where Maleficent is the alone protector of the Moors, you know, you see her as a little girl, and for some odd reason, she's there by herself with all these creatures. That's not how the movie started out. That's not how Linda Wolverton originally wrote the stories. It starts off with... you know, you have the entire fairy kingdom. You know, there's a hierarchy in the Moors, and you know, and Maleficent is basically a bastard. She is the child of a fairy a mother and a mysterious man in red, who eventually, as you're watching the movie, he realizes the devil. Okay, so the whole point of, you know, that's her two competing natures, that she's the good of her mom versus the bad of her dad. But she's this, you know, but because of her heritage, she's a full head higher than everybody in the kingdom. She's the fairy kingdom, and she's got these huge unruly wings that she can't keep under control. And she's sort of a gawky teenager that you know, is kind of rebellious. So, you know, she keeps making these faux pas. Like, for example, when the fairy procession is flying in for the night, she makes the mistake of flying higher than the king and queen, and nobody's supposed to do that. In fact, her aunt, who's also mad at Maleficent because her mother dies in childbirth, you know, finally gets tired of Maleficent misbehaving, and so she basically decides, I'm going to show the world, you know, as a punishment, I'm going to make it easy for the world to see that you're wicked. And she's the one who places the curse on Maleficent to grow the horns. All right, so it's like you'll wear those for 100 years, so the people will know, recognize that you are in fact wicked. But it turns out she's not the only halfling. There's also Philip, whose parent, you know, and again, same thing. He has to hang back because he's half human and half fairy, so he can't fly. So he's always constantly chasing after the fairy court and anxious to be accepted. And they just won't have anything to do with him because, again, he's half human. But he and Maleficent bond because they're the outcasts. So that's the start of that romance. And anyway, so Philip eventually realizes it's never going to happen. You know, he's never going to accept it for the fairy kingdom. So he decides to he decides to go to the humans, and the humans are like, well, look, we'll take you in, but we want fairy magic. And basically that's when he steals Maleficent's wings. You know, and he arranges so the fairy realm is sort of sealed off you know, from the human world. And in fact, that's what's kind of interesting is that the three fairies, Flora, Fauna, and Merryweather, are at the castle entertaining when the sort of the literally the steel curtain falls down between the two worlds, and no one can cross over the barrier now between the fairy realm and the human realm. And it's a bad thing. And obviously Maleficent getting her wings torn off, that's a bad thing as well. So she really goes over to the dark side at this point, and more to the point, she's tired of dealing with her aunt and uncle, and so she stages a coup d'etat. She takes over the fairy kingdom. And meanwhile, you know, that this is going on over a series of years. And Phillip's, on the other hand, because he's delivered magic to the king allows him to marry his daughter. And then the king dies, and Phillip becomes the king. This is where it gets kind of interesting. The way the fairy realm works is that the true queen, there's a throne. But as you walk to the throne, there's this particular stone that you step on that gets you up to the throne. And if you're the rightful queen, the stone purrs. You know, and if you're the wrong person, it screams. And so Maleficent stages this coup d'etat. She goes to ascend the throne. The stone screams. She uses her magic to heave it into the swamps. And, you know, nobody sees it, you know, ever again, or so we think. Meanwhile, she gets word that, you know, Philip and, you know, his bride have had a child. And so we now drop into the film that as you know it. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So, and they shot a lot of this. I mean, wow. All right. So this is all, in fact, there's a lot of people who are hoping that when the Blu-ray and such, that a lot of these scenes will finally be shown. The problem is, my understanding is they did early test screenings, and they knew from that point that when the film says Maleficent and you're spending 20, 30 minutes with Maleficent's mean aunt, you know, it's not working. You got to really get a strip the film back to, you know, you got one character, you got a title character, people are here to see Angelina Jolie, you know, rework the film so it does that. Okay, so we jump into the film, and the whole relationship with Briar Rose and everything you see from the film continues on, but there's one really crucial scene that they cut out. Okay, so it's Maleficent in the woods walking with Briar Rose, and they're just, you know, they you've seen their friendship blossom, and you know, they're coming very close. And so one day walking through the forest, and suddenly Briar Rose finds herself standing on the stone that Maleficent had heaved out. And she's standing on the stone, and it's purring. And it's like, and Maleficent's looking at it with big eyes like, oh, good Christ. You know, not only have I cursed, you know, the daughter of Prince Philip, but it turns out because he's got part fairy blood in him, remember, she's now the future queen of the fairy realm.
Wow.
And it's just sort of like, oh, you know, so that's why when you saw that scene of the cottage where she's like trying to break the curse, isn't just because she loves the kid. It's like, I have screwed up in a large way. I am not only cursing this innocent kid who had nothing to do with this, but this is the once and future queen, you know, the fairy realm. I got to fix this.
Oh, wow. And
so... You know, so that, you know, but of course that doesn't take. So anyway, so now the film plays out pretty much exactly as you've seen it, you know, the ones in theaters. But the crucial change is, you know how at the end of the movie you get that weird scene where, you know, Briar Rose has come back to the swamp and it looks like all of the fairy creatures are sort of bowing down to her and they're, right. You know, that's the actual, supposed to be the coronation. You know, you're supposed to see her, you know, because she doesn't want anything to do with the human realm. She throws it off. She wants to be where, you know, her friends are, where she wants to hang out. And she was supposed to basically act as the ambassador between the two worlds because she's half fairy, half human. But what happens is you see her step on the stone at first. She sits on the throne. And as soon as she sits on the throne, boom, wings come out of her back. So she becomes... the full, and it's gonna, of course, you cut the Philip at the back of the crowd like, well, that's interesting. but yeah, I mean, that was how that movie was supposed to be. And But again, they tested it. It didn't play out. They had to sort of refocus it on Maleficent. Don't get me wrong. It's still a good movie. But trust me, I'll send you the script. It's a different movie. And in a lot of ways, I think it was a better movie. But no bones about the fact that this one was enjoyable. I'm kind of hopeful that, because this one was enjoyable, that they may make more. There's at least one script out there that I'm dying for Disney to option. It's basically Peter Pan, only from the point of view of, it's Captain James Hook of the London Police Force, who. This is what's really, it's a killer gimmick for this story. It's the Funhouse mirror version of Peter Pan. It's just basically there have been a rash of kidnappings in London. All right, that somebody and somehow someone is getting into the third or fourth story of building and children are disappearing out of locked bedrooms. And so who gets assigned to the case but Captain James Hook? And so it's like this Funhouse mirror version of it where, and in a weird sort of way, I don't know if they would actually do it today because Once Upon a Time has really kind of mined the same turf, but it's just the whole notion of what if Pan were the villain of the story?
Wow.
And what if Hook were the one trying to save these kids who are being taken to Neverland, they're taken away from their mothers and fathers, and just the whole notion of this guy who's, every one of the force kind of looks down on him because he's injured. And lost his hand, in some weird, mysterious circumstance in the past. And you begin to realize that, he has some history with Peter. He's here to try to protect the kids. He's here to once and for all stop this going back and forth to Neverland and stealing children. It's been out there for a couple of years now. It's a great, great script. And I know the people at Disney looked at it, but this was prior to Once Upon a Time, and it just sort of like, I don't know if we're quite ready for that, but on the heels of Maleficent, this could be a great, great film for them.
Interesting. I've heard something about a Cruella film.
Have you heard it? Yeah. The problem with that is that that we're still very close to the Glenn Close movies. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you gotta think about it. Sony rebooted.
Yes, 2 years later.
The Tobey Maguire. I mean, it's entirely possible to circle back on the idea. It's just, what do you want to do with that? I mean, that's the decent thing about Maleficent is that at least it's a different bend of the. I mean, let's be honest here. This is basically Disney's Wicked. I mean, this is what kind of powered that film, through the production cycle. Disney was looking at all the money that, oddly enough, it's Universal. Mm-hmm. That, it has a theatrical division. They're the ones who made the Witches of Oz musical. And, ironically enough, they are kind of an interesting. Again, I keep deviating from what we're supposed to be talking about here. But there's a kind of a famous story now about the Marvel negotiations. Universal has this amazing licensing agreement that they signed with Marvel in, like, I want to say 95, 96, where basically the way it's written is that nobody can have a Marvel attraction within 250 miles of, the Universal Orlando. So Disney is prevented from bringing, those characters into their parks. And obviously, given the amount of money that Marvel is making now for the company, they really want to bring them into Orlando, and they can't. So, but there have been these sort of backdoor negotiations with Universal, and some of them have succeeded. I mean, I don't know if you know the story about how Disney effectively traded sportscaster Al Michaels, who was working for ESPN.
You talked about that on your show. That's why I heard.
Yeah, I mean, they traded him for Oswald. So what they were talking about doing was that, Disney came to Universal and said, well, look, we want the Marvel characters, and how could we get the Marvel characters? And, Universal said, well, look, in order to do this, we want a show of good faith. And it's like, okay, what's the show of good faith? And it's like, we want you to kill Oz the Great and Powerful. You know, I mean, this was a film that Disney had in development at that point. And to give you some idea how far back this was when that film was being prepped for Robert Downey Jr. He was originally the person they wanted for the Wizard. And in fact, again, I've got a draft that was so obviously of the script. It's called Brick. That was the code name for the project. That was so obviously written for Robert Downey Jr. It has this wonderful, florid language that he could have really nailed home. But, you know, he said he eventually wasn't happy, and they passed it to Depp. And Depp was, so that's how it ended up with James Franco. Partially because Sam Raimi and Franco had worked together on the Spider-Man films. But anyway, you know, Disney was like, why do you want us to kill that? And so, because we want to do the movie version of Wicked. And we just don't think in the marketplace there's room for two Oz films. In fact, that kind of got proved with that animated Oz CG thing that came out early this year. The you know, the thing that what is it, Michelle from Glee did the voice of Dorothy on, that crashed and burned so spectacularly. But no, Disney went back, and again, they live and die by spreadsheets. So they were like, okay, so tell me how much money we made off of Alice in Wonderland. And it's like, all right, well, we made over $1 billion worldwide. And, you know, we're about to do the sequel, which, by the way, is going to start shooting fairly soon. Okay. And, you know, just $1 billion, a billion potential revenue lost, you know, if Oz really hit. $1 billion, you know, good faith gesture. And Disney couldn't do it. They couldn't, you know, they couldn't walk away from that money on the table. And as it turns out, Oz was not as successful. You know, I think it only made $500 or $600 million worldwide. You know, so God, I can't believe that sentence actually came out.
Only 600.
Oh my God! Why bother to even bend over and pick that up? You know, just leave that money there in the ground. Move along. Nothing to see here. But no, that this is, you know. But the weird thing of it is that Disney was really, really hoping that would hit, because for Disneyland out in California, one of the ideas that they wanted to do, right where Big Thunder Ranch is right now, was do the Land of Oz. You know, we just thought that it would be the perfect place to drop it, because you think about it, you come out of Fantasyland and you hit Oz, and if you're coming from Frontierland, you could put like Professor Marvel's wagon or a piece of the circus, so you'd have a transition point.
Oh, but yeah, that'd be perfect. Yeah,
it would fit ideally, but just didn't happen, because you know. And the weird thing is that there was some talk and some preliminary work on an Oz sequel, and that's not moving forward. Mostly because they feel like Alice is the better bet. That you know, that people want to see Johnny Depp again as the Mad Hatter. In fact, kind of interesting. The Tim Burton's not coming back to direct it, but the gentleman who directed the two Muppet movies is. Really? Yep, that's the guy who's been entrusted with the project. And
the guy from Flight of the Conchords.
Yep.
Blanking out his name right now, but yeah.
That's okay. Same thing here. I'm sorry. The iced coffee is wearing off, folks. I can't remember crap at this point, so it's like going to be a really fun podcast.
Well, that should be interesting.
So
maybe a little. I think it'll serve the film well. It could be a little less Burton-y.
Yeah. I mean, I face it. Only Tim Burton working with Johnny Depp could have come up with that take on the Mad Hatter. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and, you know, likewise, I mean, you got to wonder about the conversations there with Helena Bonham Carter. I mean, she is Tim's wife. For Diagon Alley, the media event, she was there because Bellatrix Lestrange is featured in the Gringotts coaster. And what was really kind of sweet is that Tim came out. In fact, a friend of ours, Seth Kabersky's wife, Genevieve, had stepped away for the press event for a few moments and found herself out on the street in Diagon Alley. And here's poor Tim Burton with, he and Helena's two kids, and they're you're about to go into Florian Fortescue's ice cream parlor. And again, this is a place that sells ice cream flavors like what is it, Earl Grey tea and lavender and chocolate and chili. And Burton's looking at these things like, what can I give my children that they won't vomit? And he proceeds to have this concerned parent conversation with Genevieve, and Genevieve is trying to be cool because it's Tim Burton. You know, right, like, hold it together, hold it together, hold it together. Don't ask for the autograph. Don't take the picture. You know, I don't know. Let's say a clotted cream looks like it might be fun. But
well, actually, this is a perfect segue, actually, because I have a question from someone.
Okay.
And this is the perfect time to ask based on what you just said. So, Derek Bergen, you may know him from the
Derek
blog.
Yes, uh-huh.
Or Pardon the Pixie Dust podcast.
Mm-hmm.
He has been on this show several times. He has a question. And his question is there any early word on what the biggest sellers of the drink and merchandise at Diagon Alley?
Actually, you know, what's weird, I know from a merch point of view, and you know, God help us, we as Americans, we are so predictable. The big seller is coming out of the animal menagerie, where you know basically the students are supposed to go and buy their pets for school, so ferrets and you know hippogriffs and whatever. Big seller is Crookshanks the cat. This stuff, it is, and honestly, it is the ugliest stuffed cat you've ever seen on the planet. And I know this for a fact because we have a cat here at home called Crumb who looks exactly like it. This sort of horrible, red, stunted beast that sheds too much. And so, you know, it's funny. We went to the store and I stood there with Nancy and we picked out the most horrible looking Crookshanks and brought it home. And there was this really funny moment. We got home Tuesday night before last from the grand opening, and unpacked it on Wednesday morning and put it on the ground. And Crumb just walked up on that thing ready to attack it because it's like, you brought another cat into my house. And wow. Just, you know, and then just walked up and sniffed it like, imposter. Okay, never mind. But yeah, that's turned out to be at least. Based on the conversations, and I went around to every shop and sort of asked folks about what the big breakout was. Mm-hmm. And evidently, right off the bat, it's that food and beverage-wise. There's a belief right now that they may have made a mistake putting six different beverages out there. There's been no clear leader, or likewise, I mean, you know, when they open these restaurants, you know, they put 40 new items on the menu. So, you know, between, you know, the bangers and mash and toad in a hole and, you know, plowman's platter and all that stuff. So it's a little early for those stats. I mean, face it, we were recording this on the 15th of July, and we're just a week and a day from, the official opening.
Right.
But yeah, Crookshanks are flying out the door. In fact, it's quite possible in the next couple of weeks they'll go clean on them, and you know we're suddenly in Frozen territory. You know, just like it'll be some container ship full of ugly cats that have to come over from the Orient. But yeah, that between the what is it the lemon drink, the peach tea. The fishy green ale, you know, that's nothing's really bubbled up yet. There's some sort of anecdotal information that you know from the janitorial staff is they're pulling a lot of fishy green ale out of the trash. Mm-hmm. That evidently people will take a sip or two, go bah! And get rid of it.
It's the new green eggs and ham.
Yeah, pretty much. But you know, but at the same time, it's kind of emerged as the drink you buy and dare your friends to, you know, to drink. So
well, it doesn't sound very appetizing by the title. So I don't know what people expect.
It's sort of the same thing with chocolate and chili, you know, the ice cream flavor. In fact, I was joking with the folks at Universal about, honestly, that to me is the food you buy to, you know, when you're traveling with somebody who's a pain in the ass. you know, and all day long you've been putting up with them. That's the ice cream you buy and hand them. Here, enjoy some chocolate. You know, and just stand back and watch. Enjoy the moment when the chili kicks in and they reach for water. But, thank you, Derek, for the question. Let's circle back on the food thing in like a month or so and see what they've got for stats. But as of right now, merch-wise, again, it's that stupid cat. So,
alrighty.
You know, but again, you know, let's face it, we're, you know, the same thing happened when Garfield the Cat became a hot comic strip. Americans are very predictable. So, did I say this is the dumb person who bought the cat?
Right. So, yeah, of course. So. Yeah. Well, I definitely want to, in the future, dive more into Diagon Alley stuff. I'm not going to be able to get there to September. And in this day of age of everything being spoiled, I'm trying my hardest not to have things spoiled for me. So,
actually, let me say this right off the bat, James. You're very smart to wait till September. By then, Gringotts, which is having some operational issues, it's a great ride, but they're only running one track at a time right now. So, you know, instead of having the 8 vehicles, you know, that they want to be running in it, there's only 4, sometimes 6. So, and by September, the crowds will slid back. It won't be 1,200 degrees. You know, the only thing to take into account, and I just say this as a caution again for those of you who are into, you know, horror and dark things and that sort of thing. The current plan is the Diagon Alley will not be open on any nights when the Halloween Horror Nights is being presented.
Right, yeah. No, I heard that recently. And
that
brought up a lot of speculation I had. Actually, I did an episode a while back just speculating on Nocturne Alley.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if that would be incorporated since it was a villain's, you know,
You know, you would think so, but the thinking, and again, it's, you almost have to kind of respect the people at Universal for doing this. They're leaving money on the table. But, you know, because again, think about it. You could have the Death Eaters take over Diagon Alley for the evening.
God. How awesome.
You know, but no, it's the belief of this is basically a happy place. This is not the burned out version of of Diagon Alley that we see in Deathly Hallows, right, or to a lesser extent, you know, the Half-Blood Prince. So you got to respect Universal for making this decision that there may be scare actors out lurking in the London fog and around the London facades, but there will not be, you're not getting into Diagon Alley and you're not going to be scared there. So sorry, but on the other hand, they are building the largest Walking Dead maze in the history of man, and you know, at gunpoint, I won't go into that thing.
Why is that?
I don't like zombies. Okay. All right, you know, I honestly, you know, when I go to Comic-Con, and they'll do things like they'll take over Qualcomm Stadium, the entire stadium, and change it into sort of a Walking Dead maze challenge course.
Yeah, that's like you could actually hurt yourself on that. Climb over fences and stuff like that.
Oh, every year they're, come on, Jim, you got to write about this. Come on, Jim, you got to do this. It's like, no. Yeah, because, my daughter just relentlessly makes fun of me for this, that we'll park the car. There's a parking garage next to the trolley station there, but you have to walk by Qualcomm Stadium to get to the convention center. And what they'll do is they'll have 20 or 30 actors in full makeup, you know, basically patrolling the upper levels instead of reaching out like, and you know, I walk by there like, look at my shoes, aren't those nice shoes, I should really get these shoes polished, and my daughter is behind me going, Jim Hill of Jim Hill Media, are you a wimp, are you afraid of zombies, Jim Hill of Jim Hill Media? Oh, I would be so, I would not be proud of my father to be afraid of pretend zombies. It's like, you want me to continue to pay for college? Yes, I'll be good. So, you know, it's a joy having a smart ass for a daughter. So.
I'm sure she learned it from somewhere.
I have no idea. I got the things these kids pick off the streets. It's a tragedy. So.
Alrighty. Well, I guess we're gonna. That's enough nuggets for one day here. So if people want to find you, how do they go about doing that?
Well, I won't be next to Qualcomm Stadium, I can tell you that. I got Jim Hill Media, my own website. I do two columns a week for the Huffington Post entertainment section. I do the silly podcast that Len and I do at a very infrequent schedule, and I apologize for that. And again, we're doing this live thing on August 16th, like our first live show down at Flushing Meadow. So if you're a fan of the New York World's Fair, please come ahead, and I promise that myself, Mike, and Len will tell some interesting stories. And if not, we're serving Italian food. So how bad can it be? You know, even when the stories are terrible, the lasagna is wonderful. So, you know, just so. But no, this was great fun. I applaud you for exploring this corridor of Disney history and the fandom and mythology, because there's so many great stories here. And, you know, whether it's reaching all the way back to, you know, the scenes that got cut out of Snow White because the kids were peeing in the seats at Radio City Music Hall, or, you know, just for years and years and years. It's just Disney, Walt himself loved to scare people. He thought it was a crucial part of, you know, your hero's only as good as the villain. And, you know, there were this so many years between when Walt died in 66 and when Eisner and Katzenberg came through the door. And even then, it took them till, 89 with Mermaid or thereabouts to finally get their act together and start making good movies with decent villains. So, I mean, this is great turf. I mean, this is really smart of you to grab this corner. Just look forward to see what you do with it.
Oh, well, so. I look forward to more exploring, and I definitely would love to have you back on to explore many of these topics. Because
if there are any stories left, we are, what is this, almost 2 hours at this point. These poor people have to go to the bathroom at some point, or they've nodded off. It's like coffee. The introduction of the show. Go get a coffee. Go get a cappuccino. Double cappuccino. Because the moron will not shut up. So.
Well, no, I know there's so much more to touch. I actually have questions I didn't even ask, so there's definitely things more to talk about.
Wow. Okay, week two of the hostage crisis here, folks. I'm sorry. He still has questions. I can't leave. I'm sorry. All right, I'll come back. We'll do this again. Maybe, how about this? We get closer to Halloween. Let's circle back and do another show.
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
Because by then, you know, just... I don't know as Big Hero 6. They've just today the trailers dropped for it, and you know, it's the first time ever Disney's kind of done a Marvel supervillain. You know, it's evidently a guy who wears kabuki masks who, you know, his superpower is he can control nanites. So it's like, wow, okay, can't wait to see the Happy Meal for this one.
I haven't seen that trailer yet. I saw the teaser, but I haven't seen what you're
just dropped
about
today. When you when I finally stop talking, which will be 3 weeks from now, you should go look at that trailer. They really did a nice job. It's a nice sort of hint at what they're going to do with this film, and can't wait to see what shakes out with Big Hero 6.
Sounds good. All right, Jim. Well, thank you for coming on.
Well, it was great fun. Again, happy to do it again. If if you actually decide you want to lose another 2 hours talking to the moron. So anyway, thanks again.
Thanks again to Jim Hill for coming on the show. These have been some amazing conversations. A lot of positive feedback on the last one, so I'm sure everyone's going to love this one as well. Definitely going to have Jim back. Talk about many other things. As like I said, I had other questions I didn't even get to. So, and you know I've got some good, creepy Disney questions for him. Hey, just so you know, I have a podcast that's my own podcast. I talk about whatever I want. It's called The Even James Has a Podcast Podcast. You can find it at The Even James Has a Podcast Podcast, or by searching iTunes or Stitcher. I'm sure if you write The Even James, it'll pop right up for you. So check it out. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, complaints, or requests, shoot me an email, creepykingdom@gmail.com, and you can follow the show on Twitter @creepykingdom. And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay and fan art pics, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest. All you have to do is go to creepykingdom.com. And if you do follow on any of those social media, you know that I'm coming hard with the creepy Disney cosplay and fan art pics. That's like a whole thing unto itself. It's like a bonus you get just for following and playing along at home. Join me, won't you? We're in the iTunes store where you can rate, subscribe, and review the show, preferably 5 stars. It would be much appreciated. Let me know what you think. Shoot me a little review in the iTunes store. And we're on the Stitcher app, an application that streams podcasts directly to your smartphone. In fact, I don't even download podcasts anymore. I listen to them all on Stitcher. In fact, when I first started listening to Annie and Danny's Fast Pass podcast, it wasn't on Stitcher. So I selfishly said, hey, why aren't you guys on Stitcher? And I sent them a link to sign up. And then they were on Stitcher. So that's the power of asking. So ask what you want, kids. You might get it. But we're there. Creepy Kingdom's on Stitcher. And so is Annie and Danny's Fast Pass podcast. It's all there. Well, until next time,
keep it creepy.
I have a girl now. It is midnight. Pleasant dreams.